Hey, what's happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Strange Road. I'm your host, Mikey, and of course, as always, the bro host, Bub. Bub, yo. How are we doing tonight, buddy?
Great.
Did you have a good time at Frogman Fest?
Great time at Frogman Fest, man.
Frogman Fest ruled. I'm not going to lie. It was a great time. We did some helped out with the Frogman movie, which, by the way, if you guys haven't seen the Frogman movie, you got to go check it out. It was unexpectedly amazing.
Pretty awesome.
So shout out to Anthony and all the whole cast that we met and hung out with, the art directors and all the folks that were there. Their merch is incredible. You know, I'd love to connect with them in the future, help them out with the films and things that they're doing. Really cool stuff. Shout out to Jeff Craig. Amazing festival. We had absolutely a blast. The booth, everybody that stopped by, all the listeners and people that watched the show, we had quite a few people stop in. So shout out to all of you guys that were there. Got some pictures, got to hang out. It's a good time.
Papa Stones.
Yes.
Frogman staff.
Go ahead.
Popped right out of our booth.
Tell them about it.
Took right off. I couldn't believe it. A gentleman walked up and said, "Is that for sale?" It's like, "The staff?" And he's like, yeah.
Papa Stoner. Yeah. Stoner's dad, probably in the chat.
He's probably out there somewhere.
Shout out to Stoner's dad. He hand carved this incredible hiking stick, hiking staff, the staff of destiny, wouldn't you call it? It's not a hiking
staff.
And it has a hand carved frogman at the top.
It was dope.
You know, glass beads, the whole nine yards. And
it was cool
we just put it up for sale, just see what would happen. And this guy was obsessed with it. Shout out to him. And
he made a call, I'm assuming, to, make sure.
Yeah.
And then he came back. He got that and a hat. I was
he popped on it.
Even cooler, though. Well, I'm going to leave that. I don't want to. I'm just going to leave it.
Okay.
Let's leave it at that. It was good.
Yeah.
It was a good
weekend. Yeah. Good weekend.
Met
much
a lot of
love
fun people.
To Stoner, the loner in Master Control tonight.
He's holding it down.
And Stoner rocked it, killed it in the AV room, helping out all the presenters, doing what he does.
There he is.
All the time for this show. And made everything for the Frogman movie. Run super smooth both nights. All the presenters. Everything went great. Stoner the Machine was at it, and we had a good time. So let's hop into it, Bub. What do you say? Let's bring in our guest for tonight, stand-up comic, writer, and podcaster, Neff Johnson, everybody. Neff, what the hell's happening, dude? How are you?
What's up, Bubby?
Thank you so much.
Hey, man, thank you
for coming down. You're working all the time right around the corner here.
Yeah.
At the Attic Comedy Club.
Every Thursday.
Thursdays with Neff. The link's in the Facebook group, guys. Go check that out. If you're in the Central Ohio area or coming into town on a Thursday, you need something to do, go check out Neff at the Attic every Thursday. And we got a chance to meet you when we went to Ryan Singer.
Yeah.
Ryan Singer's show.
Right.
Had a great time. Stoner and Andy and myself. And we got to hang out with you and a couple other comics afterwards. And had some laughs, and we said, dude, you got to come on the pod.
Yeah. I had no idea there was a spaceship right around the corner. I don't know if UFOs exist or is you guys behind all of this shit, dude. This is way too much technology. At least I'm on camera in front of people. You can't abduct me.
We got proof.
They got me.
We got proof. It's all being recorded. It's all being live streamed. You could say that. You know, maybe we're sending a signal out to the great beyond. And we're going to push that signal out tonight. I know that.
Take me anywhere for a glass of Jameson. I don't care.
Hey, we'll keep it rolling. We got plenty back there. Mm. Our buddy, we were in his wedding, and Kyle and Stoner and myself were both in the wedding. Mm. And as a gift, we each got a bottle of Jameson.
Cool.
So we're loaded to the gills with good Irish whiskey.
Only other wedding I ever went to, they gave me a DUI. That's all I got.
Damn. That's rough.
Fuck, man.
That's rough.
Didn't have any luck with the bridesmaids?
Oh, man. I'm such a cornball. I don't know. People think doing stand-up is cool. Most of us are awkward micro-penis owners. We can't fucking do any of that cool shit.
Oh, man. Come on now. Don't sell yourself short. If you can stand up in front of how many people, what's the biggest show you've ever done?
400.
Dude. Yeah, that's...
You can only see the people right here.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
But see, like, I could do that with music because I could play loud enough that I can't hear you maybe booing me or saying you suck.
Yeah.
Just turn it up louder. Sound man, but...
Yeah, I'm so jealous of music. It's the same, but it's different in that you just stick to your song. Like, I have to, like, sort of ebb and flow. Well, I don't have to, but... I sort of ebb and flow with the audience, you know what I mean? You have to be able to pivot.
Yeah.
If you're in front of certain people, you can't say certain things. I don't know. It sucks.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way when you do your comedy? That you, if you're doing, depending on the makeup of the audience, you got to change it up or?
Yeah. If you're not reading the room, you're probably not doing as good a job as you could.
Yeah.
My only question about that is, do you find that that's a commonality among comics, or are there the certain comics that are like, look, man, I don't give a F.
Yeah, and you can tell who those comics... I don't
care who the hell's here.
Yeah, you can tell who those comics are when you meet them before they do their set, because they won't shut up. They don't listen to you for shit. It's all about what they think, you know what I mean? So
they're not taking advice.
Nah, those are those people that are just like, here's who I am.
So you're like, ooh, let me get in the back.
Yeah, and they either do well or eat shit. Dude, I'm pretty flexible. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, what stuck out to me when we saw you was your crowd work, and I don't know if that was just a night where you were feeling... Or if your set that you've been developing, because I know what you had 30 minutes, 35 minutes before Ryan's set. Like it was a...
Yeah, it was a feature set, maybe 20 or something.
Yeah. But there was a couple people in the crowd, dude. I was just dying. Like I literally had tears flowing out of my eyes when you were talking to that brother and sister.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just...
I remember.
Once you found out that they were brother and sister, it was on. Like I think you just threw your whole set out the window and it just became like crushing crowd work. But that's what stuck out to me was your crowd work is just like you said, that ebb and flow.
Mm-hmm.
You could really tell that you were kind of like feeding back and forth from the audience.
And that's like what the crowd needed that night. That's the flexibility I'm talking about, because I think it was sort of a lame night a little bit before I got up there. It was kind of like people weren't really into it yet, so I had to shake things up, you know.
Yeah, and you did. you got people warmed up and ready to go for Singer, because your set and Ryan Singer is just a highly unique individual. First of all, the dude's just a strange guy. So his stand-up set is about the paranormal and crystals and Bigfoot and
I'll take it all. That sounds great. What a weird comedy set, but I'll take it, man. Like, I don't mind it. I'll take any form of comedy.
Yeah. Interesting is good.
Yeah.
Interesting is good as funny sometimes.
Yeah.
Most times.
And who was the comic that went up before you? Because he was really good, too.
I want to say, was that Brian Harris?
Brian.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Brian's great.
Yeah, he cracked it. Yeah.
He's got kind of this... straightforward, I don't want to say monotone, but he's just kind of just giving it to you. Like super chill, super straightforward, but just, you know, joke after joke, telling personal stories, which I always
like
enjoy.
Sniper jokes where he's like, I don't even like I just need to pull the trigger on this, and I know it's going to make what needs to happen. Yeah,
he's my favorite. He's who I travel with when we go out of town. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like you guys had a good rapport.
Yeah,
but he had me cracking up. And I mean, the bartender that night, the guy bartending all of a sudden hops out and he was the MC. Of the night, he went up first, and I was like, okay, so the bartender's going, this is awesome.
That's the beauty of the attic. Like, everybody's pretty much a comic who you see hanging around.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the other night, we went to go get pizza, and he was working behind the counter.
Downstairs?
Yeah, he was working at Mikey's.
Speaking
it's like,
of,
dude,
we
saw your, pizza night your stand-up. Too. Yeah.
Shout out to Riley Wright, Brian Harris.
Yeah, shout out to those guys. Great stuff. But, man, how did you get into stand-up? You know, we've been chatting a little bit, kind of a background about your life and you know, growing up in different situations. And how do you just say, fuck it, I'm going to pursue stand-up comedy. This is my passion. This is what I want to do. You know, how did you get to that point where you just, I'm going all in?
So, really, it wasn't by my design in a way, because listen, I wrote comedy from like January 2019 to like October 2019 for no reason. Like, why would you ever just write shit? And I was writing it all stupid, like, hey, how's everybody doing? You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And there was one guy who knew Kwesi. He knew that I was doing that. He was the only person that knew. And we went to like some artsy little festival place. I can't remember what it was called, but it was here in Franklinton. And they had a little shop where, you know, in the corner they were doing stand-up. And he signed me up for it, but without me knowing. Yeah. But then the guy told him, no, he can't go up. It's too late. And then we sat in the audience, and the guy on stage started cracking on me. And so my buddy was like, I signed you up, but they wouldn't let you go up. I was like, what? So now I want to go up. Now yeah. I'm like, hey, man, can I defend myself? You know what I mean?
All right, I need a rebuttal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they let me go on.
Nice.
And I was such an amateur. He was saying, he was trying to give me the mic. You don't leave the stage empty.
Mm-hmm.
When you go up and then he comes off.
Right.
But when he was trying to let me up, I was like, no, you get out of the way and then I'm going up. You know what I'm saying? I was all weird. But I did really well.
Yeah.
And it turns out the audience was mostly comics, like you might see at the Attic sometimes. And,
yeah.
And they were like, oh, you got to come here. You're good. You got to come here. You got to go there. And I'm like, all right. So then I caught the bug. It's sort of like a drug.
Yeah.
First time you do it and you kind of can't stop, you know?
Wow.
But then COVID hit. So then I didn't do stand up again for like 6-7 months, whatever we were in that quarantine time.
Right. Good times.
Yeah.
There wasn't many options. Some none. People were there doing were none. Zoom comedy.
Playing Zoom Twister.
That's
yeah.
rough because there's no feedback from the audience.
Yeah.
I tried to watch a few things. You know, Bert Kreischer was doing the drive-in tours. Mm-hmm. And people were kind of doing.
Trying to make it.
Or moving to Texas or moving to Florida. Mm-hmm. But. Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah, so I'm sort of entrepreneurial. So as soon as the bar started to open back up, I found the dive bar that would let me do it. I started doing comedy in Scully's.
Oh, yeah. Scully's is great.
Yeah, they hadn't done comedy before.
Hmm.
Really?
Yeah. So I started an open mic there. And
dude, that's awesome.
Going. Yeah, I just kept going from there. It was wild, man. And then it wasn't until like last year that I kind of caught any break where like I got this residency at the Attic and mm-hmm. I can go up for almost unlimited amounts of time per week.
That's awesome.
So I've grown a lot.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know why I tried to do it, though. I don't know. It's like cosmic.
Yeah.
I had no clue why.
You just started writing comedy.
Stupid.
Do you remember the first joke you wrote?
So I was dating this girl who had a disgusting looking foot. I still tell this joke now, dude.
I thought you were gonna say face for a minute. I was like, you, you like hung on that F for a minute. I was like, what is this F gonna be?
Shit. All
right, I still tell that joke, dude.
Okay. So okay.
It was frightening, you know. So that was probably the only joke I really had because I didn't know how to write a joke. Like I said, I was writing stupid ad lib shit. You
right.
know, so. Am I supposed to not cuss or something?
No, go for it.
I'm going
go
for like it. That.
I feel like some reason I just have it baked in like a Mr. Rogers set where I have a tough time. And usually I'm very nautical. I let a lot of F-bombs here and there. But for whatever reason, when we start doing this, I'm like, I shouldn't. But no, nobody's going to mind.
Cool.
Yeah,
the foot joke was the.
I won't say that I think I'm that funny, but there are times when like I'll have a thought where I'm like, I have to write this down. And I have, like, a comedy notes in my phone where I'm like, you know, again, I've done some music, so I'm like, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's a different animal.
He's like, been on stage that. A lot. He's got a lot of stage.
That's what I was going to say.
I'm
you're
okay
comfortable
with
being on stage.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But that's a leg up.
It's weirder when it's, okay, if I'm playing a cover song, that's one thing. That's somebody else's song. That's somebody else's intentions behind it and what have you. When I wrote my own music, it got real weird.
Oh, really?
One, I never knew what my voice sounded like because I sang other people's songs, so I'm trying to sound like whoever. So, okay, what's your voice sound like? Damn, that's going to take a minute.
Yeah.
To figure out where my range is, where I feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then you write music, and everybody's like, oh, what's that mean? It doesn't mean it. Some of it means something. And not all of it means something, though. So, like, I'd always kind of just interweave things, like a little bit of reality, a little bit of false, whatever. But then you just get up there, you're like, because comedy, again, it's yours. Nobody's giving it to you at this point, right?
Sure.
Like, you don't have writers for it. You're writing all your own material.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, well, how'd you come up with that? Or how, you know, it's kind of exposing the inner workings of your mind, which is not what a lot of people do most of the time.
Yeah, it's pretty vulnerable, man. I like that part of it, though. I like to be, I like challenging things. And it's pretty tough to tell people that you're addicted to porn. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, it's like 50 strangers in there, and you're like, ah! No, you don't do that. But I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
I like the challenge of telling them, you know, the things that you don't want. That's what comedy is. Yeah. I've been saying that this year. It's like the things you can't say in an elevator. This is what we say.
Boom, dude. Yeah. That's why comics are so important, man.
Because
you're saying the shit that nobody wants to face. Yeah. Nobody actually wants to say it out loud. Or if they do, it's behind a keyboard on Twitter or some social media site. Like, they're not going to go up and, you know, take a bullhorn and most of the time spout their opinion on something.
Yeah, right. You need that, man. It's like, you guys are married, right? Like, you have to have those uncomfortable conversations at times.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
You got to check in.
I think maybe my wife would say I'm too on point with that. Like, I'm okay with, like, we'll talk about whatever. Like, but if you don't, it's going to get weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to get strange. If you can't talk, I think
that's where
something.
We're at in society right now. The news is full of shit.
Yeah.
Politicians have always been lying to us. And now I watch sports, but not like that. But now I hear guys complain like, oh, it's rigged.
Oh, man, this last year broke me. Broke me.
He's been I'm ranting a Packers about. Fan.
I watched that Packers game in the playoffs, and everybody's going to say, whatever. But, dude, Jordan Love, you're on your first down of this series. Mm-hmm. You have, like, 40-some, 50-some seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You do this scrambling, throw a pick in a triple cover.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Throw it directly to the wrong person.
What?
He's got a different colored jersey. What are you
body,
doing?
By the way, really? Across the field.
And I would just say some of the other things where people are like,
professional quarterback.
Yeah, and that's too. Like, people are like, oh, well, you can understand this pass or that pass. No, I can't. You know those guys. That's what they've been doing since our age, whatever, 11 to 20, when you hit the NFL, or 19 or whatever. You're throwing them passes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I've been seeing that, and basketball now is the one that's really thrown me off.
And the refs,
conspiracy of the magnetic rims and stuff of like.
Oh, shit, I hadn't heard this one.
And the other thing, man, to be honest, is all the betting. Now that there's all the legalized gambling, now that there's that much money involved, it just makes me go, there's no way that can be honest anymore.
Every major podcast is sponsored by DraftKings. Or what's the other one? FanDuel.
Really?
And it's ESPN, like huge corporate interests but also like tons of podcasts and just independent content, so it's literally like everywhere.
There's
and
a lot of betting.
With that many billions of dollars running through those apps, you don't think that they're pushing those spreads? You don't think they're pushing those numbers you know, the house is always going to win.
Damn, man, it's unbridled. I call it unbridled capitalism.
Yeah, crony capitalism.
Goes too far.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucking shit up.
But yeah, you're right. Politicians, it's like, are we living in this day and age where it just seems it's always been corrupt?
Sure.
Look, Smedley Butler, War is a Racket.
Right.
Look at that. I mean, read that book, man, because that's just, I mean, that was what, after, you know, World War II or even before. I mean, that was forever ago, like maybe even the 1930s after World War I. You know, he's telling you the military-industrial complex pushes these wars.
Makes money.
It's banker wars. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just so, you know, they've always been able to, you know, fund another thing to sell more stuff to keep in business and keep that machine going.
Yeah, I've seen it in the hood. You know, the biggest, you know, biggest coke dealer has another second biggest coke dealer homeboy, used to be friends,
right,
live on opposite sides of the main road, and they're like, man, I don't like him no more. You know what I'm saying? Let's go to war with this nigga. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
No. Take his shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what war is, dude. It's not necessary. Don't we have like more military than the next 17 countries combined?
Oh, the spending?
It's insane. Yeah,
we outspend like the next 17 or 20 countries.
Right. And they are on our side, right? So like, why is that?
Most of them, yeah.
Like, why do we need that?
Because we really, who knows, man? At this point, I can't even say we. I'm too conspiratorial to even think it's we. Like, I don't know if I should go down that full road. People are like, man, he's got it all thought out. But yeah, I don't know. I really don't know how it all works out or what's really behind it all. But yeah, like we have something like, I don't know how many destroyers, and the next like industrialized nation has like two.
I gotta
have
talk
like 10 to, you know, we like 20 to 2 or something. Like, we, Yeah. But here's the thing that's crazier too, man, now is like the stuff that's going on in space. All these different alerts that were happening the other day with, like, there was like a potential like issue with Russia and they're trying to put nuclear weapons in space and China. And, you know, so like now that's the new race is space weapons, which has probably been happening for decades already.
Yeah.
But is now at least like being acknowledged. So it's like, oh, okay, what are we doing up there? Put nuclear warheads up there? What are you putting up there? Like direct energy laser weapons? Like, I don't want to know about all that. Like, it's just too much, man. It's too crazy. We are living in a sci-fi movie at certain points.
Hey, I feel like I could talk to y'all and find out like what all of the intricate conspiracy theories are and then build like a comedy set based on that.
Dude. Let's do it.
And then like, but I want to come out on stage.
I'll be your consultant.
Yeah.
I want to. I'll sit in the crowd and yell crazy stuff and run out of there with the dark shades on. People are like, who the hell was that guy?
That's hilarious.
Men in Black.
Man.
I want to perform it like in a robe with some like ripped up boxers and a wig on, like a crazy guy. Like,
dude,
the TikTok.
Alter
the TikTok's
ego.
Coming. To, yeah, I want to do that.
Alter ego that shit.
TikTok's coming to get you.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to do some crazy shit like that.
There is a clip on like Twitter or Instagram or what have you with a gentleman who is clearly homeless in the clip, and he's like talking and he's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
He's literally talking about the money and the structure and where it comes from. And I mean, he's legit on point.
That's like the irony of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
You so can't crazy. Really want, you don't really want to take it from this guy because he smells like shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's telling you some real shit.
That's the whole thing. Why do we got to say that goes to a thought of why does it have to cost a lot to be worth, you know, why does it have to be? Why can't that gentleman's idea and intellect be just as valuable as somebody that's walking out of Harvard right. at the moment or NYU or something? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's
sure.
because we look at things and go, oh, that, you know, it tracks and makes sense here. Yeah. It doesn't make sense because he's not living at the same levels, but he has the same intellect.
Right.
So
yeah.
that's where we start to feel that cognitive dissonance and we get uncomfortable because we're like, I can't rationalize that there's people out there that think this way and they're living at that level. And this
we're
guy's
so
like
programmed to think that money is like how you equate
success
making
intelligence,
doing it, yeah,
getting to write your name in a history book somewhere.
Yeah, I'll never forget when I went down to remember the Occupy Wall Street movement back in the day, forever ago. I went down there with
That's
my
when you
camera,
guys would go down there and shoot,
and I was just shooting, held. Just spraying B-roll, talking to homeless people, talking to. Just protesters, all kinds of people.
He would go film anything and everything.
Yeah,
so he'd
everything.
Just take his camera and go.
I would just shoot everything, whatever. And I just talking to this homeless guy for like an hour, dude. And he was talking to me about all these things, the Rockefellers, the Rothschild. And I was already kind of, but he had talked to me about a bunch of things I'd never heard. And I went in and like deep dove on all the things because I had the footage. I have him on camera saying all these things. I'm like, this homeless dude really informed me.
But
like legitimately, he knew what he was talking
about. But that's oral history.
And
that's
he
where you
knew
can't mess
shit.
With that. That's the thing too. If you have people that really do remember things, like say COVID.
Yeah.
In a decade, in 15 years, are people going to have a sharp, if you live through it, certain, you will.
Yeah, because one of the keys.
But it might get written about in a different way. So
exactly. One of the keys to controlling people is to change the history. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what is that, The Hateful Eight. It's a movie. I don't know if it's that or Django Unchained, but they're like the start of the film is like this dude who has all the money and the power, and he tells somebody that. He's like, somebody's like, you never get away with it. He's like, yeah, well, I got all the gold and the money and the power. He's like, I'm going to write history however I want it to be.
Yeah, exactly.
He like blows away, and he's like, again, I'm going to write history how I want it to be.
Ain't that crazy, too? They put the shit in the movies to make us comfortable with it before they do it to us in real life.
Some people don't think that's the case.
I'm so glad you said
predictive
that, too,
programming.
Because...
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a whole episode on
it. Well,
it's
almost dangling the carrot, too.
Yeah.
You put it out there, and now that thought exists. Like,
you ever heard of Edward Bernays?
Mm-mm.
Oh, my gosh, man. You
cognitive infiltration.
He was the American nephew of Sigmund Freud, the psychoanalyst, right? So Sigmund Freud's the classical psychoanalyst, right?
Mm-hmm.
His nephew lived over here in America and did like the Uncle Sam poster, I Want You.
Mm-hmm.
He's the OG.
He invented
PR.
Propaganda.
Really?
Advertising and how to look at people.
He's got a book?
Oh, there's a movie on YouTube
movie.
Called The Century of Self. Yeah, we'll get it.
It's
so good, man.
Yeah, totally.
You'll love it. But it basically, it talks about him and how he learned to figure out groups and group thinking and, you know, how do I sell a car to this demographic? How do I do X, Y, and Z? Like,
he's like the pork, the other white meat.
Oh, all that kind
of
stuff.
Those classic.
Any of that slogan
like
stuff.
Milk commercials, mm-hmm. like milk slogans. You know, what was the huge milk slogan back in the day? And that even lasted until the 80s and 90s when I was a kid.
I don't remember that one. All I know is got
milk does a body good.
Oh, that. Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, one. That all comes from Bernays. But but also look, he yeah. was like basically the government working for the government and creating, writing these papers on cognitive infiltration and how essentially you can plant all these seeds and using his marketing techniques to sway voters or get people to do what the hell you want.
Without we had this them guy. Knowing it, basically. Mm. You don't think about it, but if I watch TV long enough, I'm going to want a cheeseburger. I'm going to see a film I want to go see. Yeah. I want to buy. Not kidding. If I don't see that, I can't. Those thoughts aren't in my purview. I just I think don't. That,
we were just talking about how like some comics don't hear shit. They just want to talk. They don't hear nothing. You know what I mean? They push their opinion down your throat. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not that way. I'm a great listener, but I am a fighter.
Sure, so sure.
Like, you can't, nothing you, I see on TV programs me. I'm just like, fuck that.
It doesn't make me do it. What I'm saying is it puts, it's like the little devil on your shoulder type thing. I just remove it. I don't let that I beat constant his ass. Stream give me the ideas. Up. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
What makes you, what? Why do you think someone like you or me, I don't know if it's how you grew up or just like what you've researched or... You know, because some people are easily manipulated. I'm similar to you. When I see something, I'm just like, that's complete horseshit.
Yeah.
This is just like, is that just how you grew up or you have uncles and your
nah, my bloodline. Yeah. My dad, my grandma killed a guy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're really rough people. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I don't know if you guys know this. My daughter committed suicide and she was 15.
Sorry to hear
that. And so, like...
Sorry, man.
You would never think this little pretty little girl, you know what I'm saying, has the balls to do. Like, she fought teachers. She fought the police. One time her mom called the police on her because she was going crazy. And she knew her. Well, I don't know if she knew, but the police put the cuffs on her and she was like, all right. But her little arm, she was like 11. She pulled them out and went for the gun.
Jesus.
Like everybody in my family is pretty crazy like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm probably just the only one that sort of channeled it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Directed it a little better.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's not easy, though.
Mm.
It's tough to deal with, too, if you have a very dynamic personality or even just psyche in general. You know what I mean? Like, I just have ADD, and that's tough for a lot of people. Like, it's tough for me to interact and, like, try to explain, like, if I overreact to things or how I... take in stimuli, you know what I mean? Mikey knows it can be really difficult sometimes, but...
My daughter's name was Mikey, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cosmic there.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, man, super sorry to hear that. That's I'm sure, a really tough thing to go through. But, you know, like we were talking a little bit of just, you know, some of the things in your life and how you were able to kind of come through. Is that, you know, maybe why all of a sudden you just... started writing comedy, like there's just
trauma,
something that's like pushing you to do it almost, you know, to try to deal with some of that. Yeah. I don't know,
maybe subconsciously, because I can see most comics I know have been through something, whether they want to tell you about it or not. But yeah, like I maybe just the gratification you maybe that's why I got addicted to it so easily.
Mm, sure.
The gratification you get from bringing people joy gives you some joy that you wouldn't otherwise receive.
Right.
Absolutely.
So stand up is something I kind of have to do because of that, you know, or else I don't know what I'd be or do to my, you know, it'd be tough for me to survive. That's why I told you guys during the day, I'm like, hey, showtime, let's go, baby. Like, I need that fix.
Yeah. What'd you do before stand up?
So I was in the sheet metal union for a while.
Okay.
I had different jobs. But then I bought, the news was telling us in the Obama administration, stay away from real estate so bad.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, bullshit.
That was the bottom.
That's was when you wanted to buy.
Yeah, dude.
So I bought it.
You got, oh, my gosh, man. I can't believe that. That was the bottom.
Yeah, so I bought a double. That gave me the idea. I bought a double. And I was still working, but two people were paying me rent over the course of a few years. And then I saved up enough money to buy a house over here in this gentrified area, you know, Fairwood Avenue.
Yeah.
Paid like 18 grand for it.
Back then, yeah. This was all very rough.
Yeah, and I sold it to a guy for 200.
Ooh,
barely did anything to it.
Dude.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's now these houses are going for like a half a mil down.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. They're I like them.
I wouldn't want to fix it all up.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work in a big house like that. I mean, there's a lot of nice ones, but
I like it.
You like fixing up houses? Mm-hmm. I wish I knew how to do it better. Yeah, I'm wearing the flannel. Believe me.
Yeah, you ain't no lumberjack, bud.
Give me a hammer. I was putting I was changing the door handles in our house the other day because my parents were staying over, and my mom routinely gets trapped in the bedroom because they're like 100-year-old door handles, and it just spins, whatever. So I take this door handle off. And I'm trying to put it back together. It's a 100-year-old fucking door handle. Mm. So it's not going back together easy. Mm. So I'm trying to put this screw in there, man. And I got that flathead. And that thing popped. And it still hurts in the middle of my hand here. It socked down in there. And I was like, blood. You know, and I'm trying to keep myself from passing out. And
I looked at your hands earlier. I was like, you could be in a Mary Kay commercial.
Jesus.
Maybe it's Maybelline. Fingers ass.
Oh, dude. Just the tip of his fingers from playing guitar are rough.
These are rough from playing guitar.
Oh, okay.
But damn. When I used to rock climb, man, I felt like I was wearing boxing gloves all the time because everything swells up and all the calluses on your hands. Just like what I get on my fingertips from playing guitar would happen on the pads of my hand from rock climbing. Mm. Like your dog hitting the ground with his pads all the time. So like I would shake people saying like, what the hell are you doing all day? I'm like, nothing. I'm a nurse at the time. They're like, your hands feels like you're outside doing construction. I'm like, oh, I'm rock climbing. Like they're just getting beat up every day. I haven't done that in so long.
I love nurses, the women kind.
There you go.
They're so fun. They see all type of nasty shit, so they don't. Okay, I'll shut up. I won't.
Oh, they don't, dude, my wife's probably don't bat an eye at your comedy. They're just like, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, it's.
I'm sure morbid sense of humor.
It's a weird environment working in the hospital. Like you don't get shocked by much.
Yeah,
but that's why I keep finding out here lately is after not doing it now, it's like it's strange because I don't have to have the same mentality to make it through a day anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, comedy-wise, it never matters, but, like, dealing with a day-to-day of being a nurse, like, going and, like, doing that work is just, it's not inherently that fun. Like, it's not a, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a heavy environment to daily go and kind of set your mind for that. So now that I don't have to do that, it's weird because my mind's like, oh, so you can, like, see things different now.
Did you see people die?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So my experience with that is that, like, the first time I saw it, you know, I grew up in the hood. I don't need to be, like, whatever descriptive of that. But I've seen people die early, you know,
sure,
in life. And that when somebody – that when the animation leaves a body, man, that's to me – it's I can't prove it. There's the irony of life here. Like, I could tell somebody that there's spirituality that we have, but I can't prove it. But I'm just like, that – something just left that vessel, man.
Yeah. You almost have this feeling like –
they're gone. Whatever that was isn't that anymore.
Right.
It's literally just the body.
Energy.
Right. Yeah. It's just, and you can feel it too. Like I was bedside with my grandma when she passed away for 2 days. We were all, you know, the whole family, but a lot of people kind of filtered off and went home. And it just, you know, it took a long time for her to pass away. So it's just, like, you know, you're there for like whatever it was, 2-3 days. And I just so happened to be there. And
I've never seen that though.
And it was, she was scared when she was dying.
Hmm.
Right before she passed, her face was like very frightened.
Hmm.
So just from researching DMT and psychedelics and kind of these near-death experiences, whatever she saw, she did not enjoy.
Really?
She must have been seeing some crazy shit because she was frightened.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy to
me. But then she was just not there.
Yeah.
She was, and you could feel it. You could feel this energy just like leaving the room,
mm-hmm.
and it's palpable. It's like magnetic vibration.
I've never seen it happen slow. Everybody I've seen die was because of violence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It always happened pretty quick.
Right.
But I still feel the same experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like the movies.
No.
Where they're... Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a little weird. It's very weird. And then you know, I kind of always been connected spiritually in a way. Like, I can't, you guys do that, what do they call it, sleep thing? Paralysis?
Sleep paralysis. We talk about it quite a bit on the show, yeah.
I've had it a couple
times. It's a subject. We both had it. And, you know, people have the sleep paralysis with the shadow people, and some people think it's paranormal, but really it's just, you know, it's sleep paralysis. But there's a lot of weird things that are kind of paranormal that happen during sleep paralysis. What's your experience with
that? If I sleep on my back tonight, it'll happen.
Huh.
I can't sleep on my back. Sometimes I do it just to freak myself out sometimes, just to have some fun, right? It'll be some wild. It's like it's like I'm dying. It's like somebody's killing me. You know what I mean? But it hasn't happened in a long time. But when I was younger, as I'm falling asleep or waking up, I'd feel someone sit on the bed with me.
Mm.
You know, my family, my great grandmother's. We don't, you know, black people. We don't know where we came from. We don't have no fucking. We don't have no record. You can laugh. It's okay. We don't have no record.
Right.
We don't have no record of.
Right.
You're like, I'm half Irish, you know, Macedonian and shit. Like, nigga, we from Cleveland Avenue. We don't know shit. You know what I'm saying? But we are spiritual people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so I used to feel someone sit on the bed with me, like, at a young age, like, my whole life. It hasn't happened in a long time, actually. My spirit's been sort of dead after my daughter left.
Yeah.
But I couldn't leave the house. I had a big house. I didn't need to have it. After she left, got divorced, her and her son, my dog. It was just me. But that house, for the year that I stayed after she died, had footsteps and door knocks and my TV, weird electronic shit all the time, man.
Wow.
And I liked it. I didn't want to, because that was the closest thing I could have, you know, as in terms of a connection to my kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's what I thought it was. And then, like I was telling Ryan, even when my daughter was little, my buddy or my cousin, he was my really close friend of mine, Jimmy. Okay, so he got shot in this little spot in underneath your heart.
Oh, yeah.
Where you don't bleed a lot, but you do die. And he was so tough, my cousin Jimmy. So tough. And his girlfriend was with him, and she was frantic, and she said that he was telling her to relax, chill out, just call an ambulance, I'm gonna be all right. And so he was holding it, he sort of like fell asleep and just died, right? And so to me knowing Jimmy is like, he didn't think he was gonna die. His dad was even a tougher dude. He got shot. My uncle Mike, he got shot 6 times and ran home. Like, he was a gangster. He's still alive.
Jesus.
He's still alive today.
Jesus.
Don't fuck with him. You know what I mean? I don't fuck with him.
Don't fuck with Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah. So I feel like Jimmy didn't know he was gonna pass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So at the time, I'm living with my wife and. We had hardwood floors, and we were sitting watching a movie on a little carpet like this. And there was a chair at the dining table that was maybe further than this TV. What do you say that's 15 feet?
Yeah.
The chair was about 15 feet away.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lie. We were nodding off watching this movie.
Okay.
But the kids, my baby's like little now. You know what I mean? They're in the bed. It was midnight. And that chair came over to chill. Somebody moved a chair to come over and chill with us.
Whoa.
And like, you hear it on the hardwood floor.
Yeah.
And then
screeching.
So I'm saying, I'm not asleep. I go, what the fuck? And me and her watch it. And it took maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds.
That's a long ass time.
Yes, man. And that was that wasn't a 1-1000, 2-1000. I'm talking fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And it came and sat, and I'm like, that's Jimmy. He think he about to watch Titanic with us. Like,
oh, dude. He's a Leo fan.
Dude, you've got some high strangeness.
Yeah, man, I do.
Wow. Like, really tied into this.
And I invite it, you know what I mean? I was going to ask you earlier, like, with the homeless guy, what happened first, the homelessness or the cosmic intellect, you know what I mean?
Well, he, as a part process of him becoming homeless, I can't remember the exact story. I need to dig up that footage. I mean, I could easily put something out with that. But essentially, like, he was screwed over somehow by the system, essentially. Like, he got wrapped up into, like, a home foreclosure in a really shady circumstance where the bank, and that's where he started really kind of realizing a lot of things and slowly kind of, like, woke up. And, you know, and a lot of this, I mean, now homeless people are, like, pretty much a lot of them are drug addicts on fentanyl and heroin. Back then, there wasn't like a big heroin problem. So homeless people weren't really like open air drug markets weren't really a thing. So they were like actually people that were had houses, had jobs. And the guy that I met had a whole life, wife and kids, had a great job. He had money.
He wasn't the typical person you thought would be homeless. Like he just was like one day rug pulled and like bamboozled onto the streets type deal.
But once he got out of the system, he could never get back into that home ownership, into having a job again. So he just literally was, you know, society basically just shunned him in so many ways.
Unplugged.
Yeah. And he just never went back. And yeah, he was a strange dude. But I mean, what do you think, you know, people like right now you see, I mean, there's people begging on the streets everywhere in this city.
Sure.
And it's, and I don't know if it's been that way, but it just seems different. It just seems different. Like, I don't know. It just seems a little bit more extreme.
It's different to me because I travel a lot
And
I see the same shit in every city.
Right.
And it's a pandemic in and of itself.
Yeah.
But some of the properties, all the properties I have left, I rent the rooms out to homeless people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because some of these guys don't have the intellectual fortitude to call a landlord and submit an application or whatever. So they end up homeless. They end up at the shelter. And then there's these agencies who advocate for them. So I deal with the case manager.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I know a lot of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know what to say about them other than they drive me fucking nuts, dude.
Yeah.
One time the water line broke behind the shower wall. And so it was spraying water. This motherfucker called the police. This was the day after George Floyd.
What?
Yeah. So I pull up at the house. I don't even know what's going on. And the police comes out the back. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm dead, too. What? What? And he's like, no, it's all good. This guy just called the cops for the fucking water leak. He's crazy. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, man.
So I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. It's scary. It's scary, though. Because, you know, you can overlook what's happening to your neighbor. But that's your neighbor. You're not that far from it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, if like we talk about the government fucking us over and lying to us and shit, like, how long are we going to, I mean, you guys got kids?
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Like, if we don't fight the power, what are they going to be subject to?
I'm with you.
You know what I mean?
And it's, you see the writing on the walls. I mean, just the little things that, you know, can't play tag at recess, can't play freeze tag, can't.
My daughter had to eat bananas from the side.
Yeah.
Do they do that?
They won't
let you do this in school anymore.
I don't have kids. Bro. You guys got to explain these two things to me. What's wrong with tag and eating bananas?
Dude, you know, I can't get into that shit right now because it literally.
It's too deep.
It's
going to get your blood pumping.
Yeah, well.
What's with the?
It's the padding of the world. It's the
Oh, everybody's bubble like, wrapped.
We used to beat the ever living hell out of each other. We grew up in the country.
Yeah, man.
You know, we played.
We had what were called rock wars, where you threw rocks at each. We didn't have like
bottle a Nerf rocket ball to wars throw at each other. in enclosed barns like Roman candle wars.
Yeah,
yeah.
And just
we had outdoor extreme challenges. We would hike these banks in the creek and swing on vines across the little streams and like cross over
Bub
like
had
fallen
more
trees.
More stitches
and,
in his head probably dude, than any kid you've ever met.
At least there's six or seven times just to the back of my head.
Yeah, I think I can tell.
Yeah.
Right. That's
first
maybe.
Time mountain biking with Mikey, I broke my arm and split my chin and chipped my teeth.
Really? Oh, that's rough.
This is like 10 years ago. So but that was a like rough day. That was my first
just like the CRT
bone.
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to mess the history up.
Yeah.
In Texas, they're trying to rename the teachers, have petitioned the Board of Education to change the word slavery to involuntary relocation.
Jeez.
And some people are like,
Orwellian.
I can understand if you're, you know, a little bit, I can get it. Like, you don't want your kid to have to feel like they're being blamed for anything. You know what I'm saying? And I talk about white people all the time in my show. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not talking about you guys. You didn't do anything. You know what I mean? But we're neighbors, and we have a responsibility to be that at a core level. You know what I mean? So, like, maybe they're trying to take away the history of what happened to us because maybe we're all about to be slaves in some way or not. Aren't we already in a way?
Oh, boy. You might be onto something there because, you know, that's the whole, you know, you have terrorists and now it's, you know, homegrown terrorists. That's what you see everywhere now, you know, and people like Alex Jones and guys like that, Mark Dice, have been talking about this forever, is eventually, you know, it's going to go from terrorism to homegrown terrorism, internal terrorist threats. Now it's not just terrorism outside. Just and what's happening?
Enemy of the government.
And people become enemy of the state. You know, NDAA Section 1031, you know, that which piggybacked off of the Patriot Act, which says you can be detained mm-hmm. without representation. Mm. You don't need, and they can just scoop you up. And you don't get a lawyer, and you're in some, you know, location that's
but like you said,
not
too, with
public.
The relabeling of words and re-terminologizing everything. Yeah, you know, it's like UAPs.
It's 1984.
What the hell's a UAP? You tell somebody that's 85 years old that doesn't know what a UAP is. They're going, what? You're like a flying saucer. Oh, UFO. Why did we have to?
Oh, they changed that.
That's what I'm saying.
It's
so
UAP.
To me, I'm calling it a UFO.
Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Right.
So not UFO. Everywhere.
Hey, Carlin told us in the 80s, didn't he?
Dude, George was the best.
See, that's HBO special.
It's a big club.
1998, I think, his HBO special where, you know, he goes on his epic rant of they're all lying to you. The corporations, mm-hmm. you know, they're trying to get you to eat horrible food. And he goes on his McDonald's rant you know, and everything that Carlin talked about
still
is
relevant.
What you're seeing. Oh, it holds up,
which is scary because we not evolved in 40 years?
We've devolved in a lot of ways.
Call it shell shock. It's shell shock.
Yeah.
But now it's post-traumatic
stress disorder.
Added a hyphen.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, right. There you go. So we're on the third or fourth iteration. That's why I call it Orwellian too, because in, I think it's 1984 in that novel, he talks about how they keep rebranding terms. And again, that goes why I talk about, you know, people that live through things and have that living history or oral history. Like, you can't mess with some of that stuff. You talk to people that live through things that have a different recollection than what we might see in a documentary today of how they... It's frustrating, man, because it does. It's just like...
Yeah, they could.
I don't want to die thinking I lived in an illusion the whole time.
In an illusion?
Living in an illusion, yeah. Like, in a... Like, again...
They could have treated PTSD shock, shell shock. They could have worked on that PTSD thing a long time ago, and that would have helped a lot of people, generations worth of people.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Up to this point, you know what I mean?
Well, and also then you're keeping that trauma and you're passing it on through genetics to your offspring. Yeah. So it's multiplying out now even. So,
well, the VA is finally opening up some kind of study with MAPS and doing MDMA-assisted therapy.
There you go.
Potentially psilocybin therapy for PTSD to treat veterans. I mean,
that plant medicine.
The suicides for vets... Mm-hmm. It's something like every 20 seconds there's a veteran that commits suicide. My brother's a Marine. Shout out to Big Bro. And, you know, there's at least 6 or 7 of his guys within the last few years that have all committed suicide.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's because they've seen so much and the only thing the VA does is just pump them full of 7, 8 different pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah.
Then they're numbed out.
Shrug their shoulders
and go. It's either that or you drink yourself to death. Mm-hmm. That's or what's the alternative? Mm-hmm. You can't smoke. If you smoke to take the anxiety down and medicate, cannabis, it's if you
pass, lose your benefits?
You lose your benefits.
Oh. You smoke weed?
Yes. You cannot because it's not federally legal.
Come on, man.
Yeah. So
how about that?
If your family has that insurance, you're a retired vet and your family has insurance, if you piss dirty, Just your family, you lose all of your health care benefits.
Just because the federal government can't get a VIG.
Right.
There you go. Well, there you go.
Give them it. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if there's enough plant medicine to go around, but I think they all need. I mean,
that you can grow profits, mushrooms in a closet.
It's just profits. They don't care. It's just profits.
You can grow mushrooms literally anywhere.
Like Zeus, the researcher we had on, he's like, you know, they're trying to make and take psychedelics and make these synthetics and take the trip out of it.
Yep.
And make these synthetic. It's like, it's already kind of good how it is. I don't think you need to mess with it anymore.
You take the spirit out of it.
Just figure out the
dose. You were saying you're spiritual. The psychedelics, you're removing the trip. You're removing the spirit, the essence from the trip. That's why it helps people, is because of going through that experience of whatever it's showing you. And without
I'd like to try it.
What is it?
Just to see how different it is from real plant medicine, you know?
Yeah.
The only way I could equate it was if you flew somewhere instead of driving. Like, I've driven across country so many times, and I guarantee there's many people that'll never do it because they're like, why would I drive across country? One, because it's amazing if you have the time. But taking the trip out of the psychedelic is like taking the airplane there to get there. You just don't go through all of the whatever.
You guys done DMT?
No. So we've had a couple people on, researchers that have talked to us about it. And, and we had a guy that... wrote a whole book, the DMT Field Guide, right here, actually.
Yep, this guy, Adam Butler.
And pretty interesting dude, but he goes through all his whole experience. And then we had a couple researchers on, and I've watched so many documentaries and different things over the years, but, you know, trying to just learn more. But this guy, Giordano Rossi, who we just had on last week, actually. So it's kind of weird that, you know, we're having you on to talk about different things in your journey. But Gio, Brazilian, you know, getting his PhD in psychedelic research and has been studying ayahuasca. And some of the things that they're finding is just mind-blowing about charting, you know, with ketamine and ayahuasca and the different... you know, there's all kinds of different alkaloids and different chemicals that are in the ayahuasca brew, and kind of looking at and seeing how it's affecting people and how their depression and anxiety is, you can chart it and they're getting better and they have that stuff so dialed in where they're actually able to measure you getting healing benefits.
Nice.
And fixing your depression, PTZ, anxiety. But, you know, we were chatting a little bit earlier today and you have some experiences with that.
Yeah.
What made you seek, was it ayahuasca that you took?
Yeah,
what made you seek and you went to Peru?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I need to hear all about this.
So, you know, my, I don't know what to call her. She's like, she's just really a woman who looks out for me a whole lot. We were going to move in together before my daughter died, but she's got kids and I kind of can't live with kids anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's kind of too much. But she looked into it for me because, man, like that first year, dude, like I couldn't look up that much. Like my shoulders were bent over. Like for the first 7 weeks after my daughter passed, because I watched her do it to herself.
Yeah.
And, I couldn't speak. I didn't speak for about 6 weeks. Not really. And then but the first time I went on stage, I laid on the ground and just did comedy, just staring up at the ceiling.
Like, what? You know what
I'm saying? Like, it was in a basement in this place called Junior's, too. It was all dirty and shit. And people laughed. They thought it was my act. They thought that was how I was, you know what I mean? But I was just able to sort of pull it out.
Yeah.
Whatever. But anyway...
I would have loved to have seen that.
I'm
getting like Tom Green vibes, matter like a Jim Morrison of like comedy. Like just,
I just spoke from a place of pure depression. You know what I mean? And they didn't know what was going on with me, so it was funny. But
again, 100% real. It doesn't matter. It people real. Vibe with that. It doesn't matter.
Authenticity,
you know?
Man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Truth.
Yep.
And so she looked into it, and there was a place in Kentucky. I could have went to. I'm like, that shit's not real. Fuck that.
No, I've heard about this one.
I've seen the docu-series on A&E.
Oh, yeah? Real. That's, I think, a fairly legit.
I've watched every episode.
Really?
Yeah. Just because
I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
Yep.
I didn't do that, so I said.
I'm not mad about it because I'm
glad you didn't.
Really?
Yeah, because I've heard some strange stories.
The Peru trip sounds interesting.
So I went to Peru because there they have a facility with a doctor, a psychiatrist, a nurse, a shaman, you know what I mean?
Full nine.
Yeah. And it takes forever to get out there, but they don't care about money, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I was down there for like 4 days, and that was like $300.
What?
Yeah, and like you stay in the facility, you know, it's like a little place, like three beds, me and some guy from France, another guy from fucking Venezuela and shit.
Wow.
You know, and so it was really safe.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It's interesting. I'm trying not to say it in a weird way because it's so out of this world that if I've told this story before and people go, So I'm trying not to do it that way. So I took a plane. You know, you go all the way to Peru, and then you got to take a fucking van up this one way, like off a mountain. Yeah. It's like, and I'm looking at death. You know what I'm saying? And this dude don't give a fuck.
Sketchy ass roads.
Yeah, he don't speak English and shit. And he's just flying up there. Yeah,
they fly.
So, yeah, you get up there, and then they got this shaman. Okay, they speak Spanish, right?
Yeah.
But in the mountains, they got a whole nother language.
Yeah.
I think it's called Cachuan.
Mm-hmm.
And so the interpreter has an interpreter to talk to you. And, oh. You know what I'm saying?
We're going telephone game deep now. So it's really like, deep. Okay. Yeah.
This little short, sweet dude, man. And they tell me, you know, people move here, and if you do, you don't pay. The people in the village build the house for you if they fuck with you. You know what I mean?
What?
Yeah, man. Fuck money and this capitalism shit.
That's what I'm saying.
Amazing already.
There's some communities that just are co-creating everything together.
Yeah.
And it's all for the greater good.
The word is community.
Yeah, that's real community.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's what we're missing out on.
Yeah. And so you gotta stay there for a couple of days before you get up in the mountains because the altitude is so high.
Sure.
You gotta get acclimated to it.
Absolutely.
So I finally get up in there, up in the mountains, and this is nice facility, man. And it's like 17 people. And the first night, you know, I meet people and they all do it. And some guy starts crying and screaming and shit.
Sure.
And I don't see him the next day. He went home. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if it's for everybody.
It's not.
I don't know if it's for everybody. Because some people just do it. They tell you this, like, don't do this just to have fun.
It's not a game.
No.
It's eating mushrooms and going to a show.
There's much more enjoyable things of just pure excitement and joy, I'm sure, than going and having a broad hallucinogenic experience for multiple hours.
But I went for a reason in it, so it was therapeutic for me. And it's a circular sort of like hut that you're in, and the little windows at the top, and you can kind of hear the animals outside, you know what I mean?
The Aoka.
It's beautiful, man. Yeah. But I'm sort of a rough guy, so the first night I did it, nothing happened to me, you know what I mean? It's not like weed. It happens. Yeah.
People don't trip the first time.
Yeah, I had to learn to lean into it.
Yeah.
Because like smoking weed, you get high and you're like, I'm fucked up. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get more high than you want to be, you know? But the first time, I'm a comic. I'm laughing at people and shit. Like, these motherfuckers is throwing up and shit. And I'm like, oh, he went to go shit. Look, he about to go shit. Look at it. So I'm cool the first night. Second night. Again, okay, so the second day, we go digest in the morning what happened the previous night. So I tell him, hey, man, nothing happened to me. You know what I mean? No, you know. So the second night, they gave me a double dose, you know. And this shit is crazy because the shaman has to go up in the mountains and find the ayahuasca. And then he's got to do something. He's got to find another plant to mix with it so it's digestible to your
system. The tracuna leaf. And the ayahuasca vine doesn't have the DMT in it. The tracuna leaf does.
Okay.
The vine has the MAOI, which allows you to ingest orally the DMT.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't eat DMT like crystals and nothing will happen.
Right.
Because your enzymes in your stomach will disintegrate it.
Okay.
So they put the vine in with the leaf and somehow they figured this out of thousands and thousands of plants.
Yeah.
In the Amazon.
I didn't listen to shit. I was just like, give me more. You know what I mean? Thank you for your science, sir. That's pretty good.
Some old school ancient science.
Right. Yeah, it's ancient shit, man.
Yeah.
And that's another thing they told us in the whole, like, during the day. They were like, this is the essence of Mother Earth.
Yeah.
You know?
They call it the grandmother.
Yeah. Yeah, like Mama Wana, Mama.
Mama Saka Mama.
That's something Mama, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mother Earth and Father God, right? Mm-hmm. So I took the second night, I took a double shot, still nothing. But I went back to the room and just hurled like crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nothing happened, though, that night. You know what I mean? I told them that again, that nothing happened. And so the third night, they said tomorrow, we're going to put the men on one side, we're going to put the women on another side. Because I told them what happened to me. They were asking, you know, about why you're here. Right?
Sure.
And I told them about my daughter. And they're like, we're going to put the women on another side, and we're going to put you over there with the women. I don't know why I didn't ask no questions. I just go on the women's side. And there's this little Chinese, Asian woman, little bitty woman, and she don't talk much. And this is where it gets weird. I don't know what happened to her, but I feel like she was human trafficked.
Mm.
She said she gave me the details that made me put this together.
Her story.
Yeah, but she didn't tell me too much.
Sure, sure.
She didn't talk much.
But kind of somehow
you got the inkling that she was trafficked and was a sex slave or something.
Yeah, she said she came. She said she lived in a little itty bitty village that nobody ever comes to, and she left it early 2000s. And she said her grandmother was there. She hasn't seen her since then. And I'm like, oh, some guy came over there and was like, let's go. Like Michael Jackson used to take kids from Africa and shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I think happened. You know what I mean? So they sent me over there next to her. I take a triple shot this time.
Hello.
And I lean into it because this is my last day here, that night there. And so I and then I kind of hear her making, like, sexual sounds.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And then the ayahuasca started talking to me. And I can't hear a voice, but I know what I'm being told. You know what I'm saying? It's not like me hearing you talk to me.
Right.
But I'm hearing the translation, and it's like, this is not sexual. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's telling me, this is how you have to, like, I was very close to my daughter, right? And so that first year or two, I cut everybody off. And so it's like, you have to give love, you know what I mean? Especially to women, because I'm a girl dad. I don't know if you guys got girls.
It's a
different thing.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? You kick your boy in the face, get the fuck out of here, I'm playing video games, go in your room and play out, you know? But your daughter is another thing. So it's like, you know, she's like, you got to give love, you got to let the love out, you know what I mean? And not in a sexual way with women either, you know what I'm saying? And so, but she's over there like XNXX.com. It's crazy. You know what I'm saying? But then I saw all of the little, you know, mathematical, little weird geographic, you know, just
sacred geometry.
Yeah, geometry shit. You know what I mean? It's like a circle, and I'm sort of like, I'm not in my body. I'm sort of like diving into it, and it's showing me shit. And come out of it pretty quick, but we started at 8, and it's like 1 a.m. You know, and I don't really remember that time lapse much at all. But when I came out of it, I was happy, and I hadn't been I hadn't been actually happy for forever. And so the little nurse guy, he walks you to your room because people are sort of inebriated maybe and shit. And he's like, I'll walk you. And I'm like, nigga, get away from me. And shit, I start running. I start skipping. I'm doing the cartoon thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know. And the next day, when we all digest what happened the previous night, you ever get drunk and do some crazy shit and don't remember, and everybody's looking at you like,
oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's so just last weekend, so yeah. True. So we'll talk about it later, but.
Everybody's looking at me like, what happened to you? And I'm like, what the fuck you talking about, man? I try to tell them, and they're like, no, something was going on over there. And I don't know if they were talking about her making those noises.
Oh, I see.
But and so I asked, and they're like, no, you were weeping, sobbing.
Oh,
like you were wailing.
Wow.
I don't remember none of that shit.
Just a release, wow. Dude. You yeah. just released yeah. all that yeah. pain.
You were like a volcano.
That's why you were skipping. Yeah. You're just like, I feel yeah. light. I'm going to get in the air and,
yeah, yeah.
and yeah. you know, tap my feet.
So this is...
Click my heels.
Not on the same level. That's what I was saying earlier about when I switched up careers from, like, every day. I had to, like, mentally think a certain way of, like, all right, I'm going to go in here today and somebody might die. I might be doing chest compressions. I might be drilling into somebody's hips. Somebody might just got a cancer diagnosis and they're going to die in a month. Mm. And that's going to be patient after patient after patient after. I'm going to see face after face after face of this. Like, you just numb down. But, like, once you don't have to do that anymore, you can kind of, like, oh, I can be a little bit more, like, happy and carefree because, like, daily I don't have to mute that. Because you don't want to be that happy in front of somebody that's, like, you get what I'm saying? So, like, there's this, like... Yeah. You beat it down a little bit when you're constantly dealing with people in tough situations. And, like, you were in such a tough situation for so long, you know, that once you finally got to blast that off in that last night, like, they must have known something to switch you up, too, of why they're, like, the energy's not working for you.
Yeah, yeah, the shaman was the one that spoke Quechuan. He was the one that told the other guy to do that to me, you know. So that's, I mean...
Because maybe
fuck
they were saying...
Fuck Big Pharma, dude.
Yeah. Right.
This little, you know what I mean? This little tiny dude with feathers in his head and shit, he knew.
Do you
think... Oh, he knows. He's trained.
Do you think
they're
they were
not
telling
just
him?
Like medicine men.
Yeah.
They're psychologists.
That's the hospital.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a hospital up
there. No, and young kids take it.
Mm.
They don't, like, do a triple dose, but in those communities... Children take ayahuasca, and, you know, they'll give them, like, thimblefuls and, and, you know, bring them along, like, slowly into it. But it's not a drug to them. It's not this, like, it's just a part of their, and they're the happiest people in the world. Those
nice.
People that are well-run with a good
there
shaman.
Are a lot of things that are drugs. Coffee's a drug. Sugar's a drug.
So that's
oxygen's a drug in the hospital, you know.
So that's the part I left out before I could go there for, I think it was 14 days, maybe 20 days.
Yeah.
No coffee.
Yeah.
Clean out.
No fried foods.
Yep.
No pop.
Oh.
Yep.
No weed.
Yeah.
So you went in,
you were
like.
A whole lot of shit I couldn't do.
Yeah. Sex.
You were like solid as a rock.
Yeah. 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 It was that too. No. Yep. Yeah.
And
yeah, was.
Also, you definitely know like SSRIs or Zoloft or pharmaceutical.
How do you go
drugs.
About that though?
You have
How do
to
you talk to your doctors about like if you're on a.
You have to wean off before you go there.
Like,
if they find out you're on it, you will not. Take ayahuasca. They will not get
it's
if it's
probably
a good
not
center.
A good
yeah,
idea.
I think it was.
Yeah.
If it's a good center, they'll make sure and somehow they'll know if you're, you know, taking your medication or not.
Mm-hmm.
They won't give it to you.
Yeah. I don't know what it would do to some people. Maybe that's why a couple people had bad experiences.
It's not good.
And had to leave.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go back, dude. I wanted to go back every year, but the trip getting down there is sort of expensive.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And I like to stay in American hotels when I'm out the country. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's expensive as shit.
Yeah.
They charge you American money for those.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, but I'm going to try to get back. Maybe not this year, next year. I'm not all the way how I should. I'm not all the way functioning the way I used to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sure. Hey, man, it takes time. It's not like one shot's going to cure it all. You know what I mean? That's a... And I don't know that it cures it. I think it just helps rewire so much and helps you deal with things so much more. It reminds me of like the quote of the guy was like, terminal cancer patient. They were doing studies with psychedelics. And it was like, okay, well, what did that psychedelic do for you that the Zoloft or the serotonin didn't do, you know, serotonin blocker didn't do? And he goes, made me deal with my problem.
Mm.
It made me look, I have cancer. I have this. I have that. It couldn't be like I could take a antidepressant and just not feel depressed. That didn't deal with the problem. It's like the Mrs. Doubtfire, like, we'll move. When we come back, maybe our problems won't be here.
Yeah.
Like, no, that problem's still going to be there. You got to deal with it. And so that's what, with a lot of these psychedelic therapies, they're finding out, like, you're dealing with stuff. You're actually, it's that whole id, super ego, all the stuff, stuff we were talking about with the Bernays, the how we and our minds work. And once you get to a certain level, you start, as you say a lot of times, leveling up. You're like, really, like, working on yourself, you know, getting your mind to the next level. Like, really keep digging at it.
It gives me a newfound definition of like the word grounded. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ever see people, you know, you ever know rich, super rich guys that you would never know are rich like that because they're humble. They say rooted. They say grounded. Mm-hmm. They say down to earth. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And that's what this shit is. It comes from the ground.
Yeah.
It keeps you like, it gives you like, you know, because those people, man, they don't got Jordans.
No.
And fucking Rolls Royces and shit.
And they're happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see anything like in terms of nature or imagery of the jungle? Sometimes you hear people see the jaguars, anacondas. Did you have anything like that that kind of connected it, the experience to Peru in any way, or your ancestry, or anything that kind of came through of you know, you did say earlier that you don't really know who you are or where you come from.
Yeah.
You know, being, you know, your heritage or your roots. Because I know sometimes that stuff kind of comes through as well. But yours was pretty well focused on.
I was going to say,
I had so much going on.
Yeah. It's hard to.
But that didn't seem like that was your focal point. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, you know, for this plant to tell me what was going on with me.
Yeah.
Means that it was way beyond what I could even ever fathom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like, I can really, sucks. I can only remember that first entry.
Yeah.
As it was starting to, I'm starting to lean into it and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, it's like a circle and I start to fly down into it. And that's kind of all I remember is the geometry, like these little things. It was like a little world I was looking at.
Oh my goodness.
But that's all I can't remember.
That's your inner self, your inner universe.
It makes sense.
You're going inward or something. You know, that's like I don't know.
It makes sense with DMT though, of how you don't recall it. Right. So like we dream, that's the chemical we're exuding when we dream. So you wake up and it just, blah, 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 it's gone.
So I did DMT before I went to ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to get my way there.
Yeah. You know what
I mean? I'm from the hood. We don't do mushrooms and shit like that. Like, any of my homies is watching this. I'm sorry. I never told y'all I did this shit. I ain't want y'all talking shit about me. But like, I did the mushrooms.
Yeah.
And then I did DMT to get me there.
Yeah.
And I recorded myself doing DMT. And then right after I came out of it, I digested what I saw there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I do remember that.
Right.
And that was not nearly the same as ayahuasca. In fact, it tried to scare me and shit. Like, I don't know if it's comedy, but I kind of saw a wall of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They were red and they were like kind of evil.
Dude.
You know what I mean? And I told you, I'm a fighter. So I was like, fuck you, nigga, I ain't scared of you. You know what I'm saying?
and then it probably turned on you a little bit.
Nah.
No, okay.
It got cool.
Oh, good.
And then it would show me shit like, it's like right now, there's a behind me, there's in front of me, there's a beside me. In this, there was none of that. I was just like, I was part of it and it was telling me, look, watch this. It was like showing me shit. Like, I bet you can't do this. It was like, and it was like crazy shit. And I was like, oh shit.
Yep.
And even then, it was feminine. Mm-hmm. The
energy.
The energy was feminine. You
really?
Know what I mean? The first time I did it, I cried because it's like, that's my daughter telling me jokes. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
But I don't know, because she was funny. She was funny as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's another reason you're doing some comedy.
Were you doing comedy before you did the ayahuasca journey and all that?
The time I told you, yeah.
Okay.
That was 2019, the time that my buddy signed me up. And then 2020 is when I started doing comedy at Scully's. And then 2021 is when she died.
Okay.
Do you see it as a way of connecting with her doing comedy too? For you, doing comedy is, since you said that she was always...
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever like said this out loud, but I feel like I kind of took her journey. You know what I mean? Because when you're a parent, it's not about you.
I totally get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
It's all about like creating an environment for her to be what she wants to be.
Absolutely.
And so now that I don't have that responsibility, sometimes I see myself being what she might have been. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Free, and I don't have kids, and it's like, you know what I mean? Just trying to find my way again. You know what I mean? Some of my seed came back to me to just sort of like live it out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. No, it's what you're saying makes total sense. Mikey has kids. I don't have kids. I think very deeply on these subjects, though. And I think of what you're saying there as well of, you know, Mikey, you want to give your kids the best possible life they can have and attain their goals and dreams and hopes. And I always see that as an extension. Like, it extends you out as a person. Like, you know, my parents would be like, oh, I have a kid that does this, or I have a kid, you know, when you talk about your children, right? Mm. At that point. But not having that, it kind of makes me like, man, should I be doing more? Am I being lazy with this, you know, ability to go do that kind of thing? But at the same time, it's just like, I don't know where to go with it. You know what I mean?
Having somebody looking up to you to make sure they're okay puts another level of ambition in your pocket.
Oh, man.
You
know?
Yeah. And they
can only imagine.
Good luck charms, too.
Sure.
Yeah, and, you know, you're just trying to turn them onto cool stuff. Try to introduce them to art and music. Mm-hmm. And, hey, this is – you're going to learn this in school. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn this from me.
Yeah, and then
you're not going to learn this in school.
Right,
and they're just like, oh, Daddy, you're crazy. Yeah. You know, I tried to explain to them the Nephilim and fallen angels the one time on the way. Or my oldest, she asked me a question, and it, of course, it just devolves into this ridiculous, you know.
You're going to get called
tirade. And she's, how did we get, I asked you about the Ice Age. How did we get to here in Atlantis? And
you're going to have teachers calling you, and your daughter told us this today, Mr. Lee.
Oh, yeah.
They'd is she teaching you shit yet?
Oh, yeah, for sure. She taught me, teach me how to play chess right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
She whooped me the first 10 times. I still have not won.
Yeah.
It's That's hard dude. It's super hard.
I love that game.
The pieces just, you know, I'm like, hey, which one, which direction can I move this one? Can I move, is that the one where I can only move in an L shape? No, that's this one. But yeah.
I only remember how chess pieces move because we had battle chess on our sweet computer back in the day where they would like literally like fight each other when they would animate.
Apple
that 2E. Was the only way to get me enough interested because nobody in our house was playing chess, Monopoly, and I was getting beat every time, man.
It's the game of life, dog.
Monopoly?
Yeah. Oh, no. Hell no.
Or chess.
Chess, yeah.
Chess. Because not
Monopoly is the game of billionaires.
That's probably why I lost at it. That's not my mindset.
Yeah, we'd have some fights. I remember back in the day. Monopoly gets ugly.
Well, the whole game is to have everybody else not playing, and I want to keep playing the game.
You're
so I'm
just
like,
become a robber baron mentally. You're just like, I'm taking over. It's like Bill Burr says, oh, I put on a suit. I can just feel the power. Like, I just want to go take some shit over.
I think I have heard that bit.
He's nuts, man.
You know, I put a suit on. I just feel like taking some shit over.
You get on a power trip in the threads.
That's one powerful comic right there.
Oh, Bill Burr's amazing. He's coming to town.
He's pretty strong.
Doing, I think, the Schottenstein or Nationwide.
Really?
Can't remember which one, but yeah, he's got a big arena tour he'll be here for in the summer.
You gonna see?
I would love to get a ticket. Mm-hmm. If it's not sold out, I think there's something right now on a soft hold on our calendar, but I would love to.
I'd love to see what your analysis is after having seen comics at the Attic in the Intimate Room.
Yeah.
And then see a comic who's got arena jokes.
Yeah.
That's a little different.
Yeah, I've seen Chappelle in an arena. Mm-hmm. I've seen Chris Rock before Bigger Blacker.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chappelle's Killing Them Softly tour, I believe. That's,
you went to that?
Yeah.
Whoa.
It was at the Shot back in the day, yeah.
Nice.
And then Chris Rock was the following year with Bigger Blacker. So I saw both of the – that's before I knew that they were touring with that material. So when it came on HBO, I was like, dude, wait a minute. I saw that live. Yeah, it's the same That's when I realized, oh, these guys are rehearsing
something.
This thing and doing the set and getting it tight and tighter and tighter to where now they can go in the stadium and just kill it. But, yeah, I was very spoiled to be able to see. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big comedy fan is seeing Chappelle and Chris Rock in their prime like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was during Chappelle's show, too.
Mm.
And it was just... I mean, unbelievable. The stadium experience was really cool. I've seen Marlon Wayans at a comedy club, Intimate. You know, there's a few other shows. But the Attic's just a different vibe because it's not like going to the Funny Bone.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? Or like
not
the Laugh Factory. It's not commercialized.
It's the real thing.
Yeah.
New York style.
Loved it. Loved the experience at the Attic.
That's kind of like a resurgence now, right? Like. comedy clubs popping up, like legit comedy clubs.
Yeah, we're in a boom. We're in a comedy boom.
I think so.
I think it's
podcasting, just a big part of that. Huge part of that.
I think it's revival of a lot of things where people are going, I don't want to go to Columbus and feel like I'm in California at California Pete's Kitchen. I want to go to Columbus and go to the Attic. Mm-hmm. I want to go to Cleveland and go to whatever they, you know, we don't want to go to the same stamped out carbon copy place every time. You want that vibe to have its own space. Do you as a comedian want to travel around and be like, oh, it's just like a Marriott everywhere I go? The same comedy club over and over. Like, it just has the same aesthetic. Or do you want to go somewhere and it has its own history, comedians that perform there type thing?
I want to go. I don't have a choice.
Right. You
know, if somebody books me, I got to take it most of the time, 90-80% of the time.
That's fair.
So I just ride the wave. But most comedy clubs are built to conduce comedy. You know, everybody's seated close because laughter is contagious. The lights are not on them, so they don't feel like they have to be quiet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
It's always pretty much the same. But the Attic and, you know, places in New York where you do comedy are that same typical, like, intimate sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I like that more than anything because you can't bullshit right there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's not like in a comedy club, you might feel like the Chuck E. Cheese dolls with the music. You just do that. You know what I'm saying? But when you're like right there, it's like, you know, I can do the thing with the brother and sister. Right
oh, my
there,
God.
You know what I'm saying?
That was brilliant. Yeah. I was dying.
You can't do that when you're in an arena. You know what I mean? I mean, I've never done an arena, but
it's too far removed, though, from the like being able to really get mixed
really in the crowd. You know what I mean? That's what Dave said when he came. He said it reminded him of Greenwich Village.
Yeah. Nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. We just started seeing that pop up where it would be like, Dave Chappelle was at the Attic last year. Like, what the?
Back
how
in
did
September.
That? And we would could never find it. Could never like hear about tickets fast enough.
Tickets,
so
yeah,
he sold out in like 60 seconds.
Yeah, it was
it's on the radar. If it ever happens, it would be sweet to catch a show over there. But like just to catch a show,
go to Yellow Springs.
I'm gonna need a text.
No, I want to catch a show of yours over there as well.
Oh yeah, I opened for him two of the three times he was there.
Man, that's dope.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But yeah, let's go to Yellow. I would love to go to Yellow Springs. If you're ever there, let us know. I'll keep
an
eye on your Instagram.
I'll totally
travel out to. I love Yellow Springs.
Yeah, you'll love it. Quick drive.
Yeah.
I mean, hike around
Glen Helen.
Get some food.
Great food there, too. Great food trucks always.
Yeah.
And there's a lady who has some sort of Caribbean restaurant in Oakland. It's pretty famous. She's coming to Yellow Springs to open her same restaurant there right in the fucking Cow cornfield town.
Wow.
Shut up.
Great.
Really?
Yeah, real treat.
Man. Have you ever seen the Letterman Netflix show where he goes to Yellow Springs?
And he takes Letterman all around Yellow Springs.
He's just like, how do you live here? He was so perplexed because Dave's really insulated. You know, that community really protects him.
Yeah.
They make sure nobody fucks with him.
As they should.
You know, that community's got his back.
Feel normal.
Yeah.
And you'll drive down Yellow Springs and there's Dave and his Mercedes. Yeah,
I don't talk
He'll
to
wave
him.
Right at you.
I don't fucking talk to him, man. Yeah. Like, I've been shoulder to shoulder with him a few times. Him and Donnell. I mean, it's not reverent.
Donnell Rawlings.
Yeah. It's like, I just out of respect, man. Like, I just treat them how I would want to be treated. You know what I mean?
You're waiting until he's like, hey, how are you doing? Then he'd be like,
yeah, and he's done that. And I'm like, hey, man. Like,
but that's a
freaking out.
That's something that you understand, too, though, is that. You know, don't want to be that person that, because you know they're getting that
all the time.
Right.
Yeah. You're playing it cool.
Yeah.
Playing it cool.
Yeah. I actually kind of like get a phobia if I see somebody I know that's famous. I'm like, oh my God. But I'm not going to go up and ask you for an autograph. Yeah. I'm going to like more be like, I just want to take your picture and know that I saw this and it really happened.
Yeah.
I met Big J Okerson and Tony Hinchcliffe backstage at Rockin' the Range. We were shooting a documentary, Long Live Rock. And I was running around with Sam Thompson as my audio guy. Cody Stoner's little brother was on my crew. And we were just running around shooting all day, doing OTF interviews and whatnot. And I'm walking through this area. And I was like, holy shit, that's Tony Hinchcliffe. Damn. I'm not gonna fanboy out. Like, I love Kill Tony. Mm. I just, everything that, and this is a while back, too, before Kill Tony was what it was.
He seems snarky, though.
I mean... he's
Jay's cool though. Jay's cool as shit.
Yeah, Jay's real cool. He was super nice. But he was like, oh man, that's a sweet camera, and then just stop and talk to me. I was like, all right. No, he was super nice. He was super cool. And we just chatted about cameras and production and his comedy set. And I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna try to, you know, hey dude, you want to get a picture? Like, you know, I'm backstage working too.
Yeah.
I mean, we've come in contact with a lot of artists and stuff, and you'd kind of just like, oh, there's LL Cool J, there's Snoop.
Damn.
Yeah, I can't run up and just be like, hey, can I get a picture? Which the only person I did that to was old boy from Coheed and Cambria.
Claudio Sanchez?
Claudio Sanchez.
Guy with more hair than a lion's mane.
I had to get a picture.
He got some wild hair.
So when Dave came to the attic, they gave me an invite to the 50th birthday party in Madison Square Garden. Like a couple weeks later, and I went, and I wanted to fanboy out to at the after party and shit, because Whoopi Goldberg walked past me.
Damn.
And I turned around and I was like, hey, and it was Travis Scott. I was drunk.
Shut up.
I'm joking.
It was Travis Damn. Scott. Oh shit.
Damn.
Dude. That's rich. Oh man,
I hate when jokes work on stage and not in like these situations. I've been doing that for like 2 weeks, and people laugh at that. But you guys are like, huh?
I didn't know.
You might not even know who Travis Scott is.
I wonder if that's the thing. Do you?
Okay. Yeah, I just saw him. He dapped up Jake from State Farm at the Iowa game with Caitlin, whatever her head is, looking like Pistol Pete. I watch enough social media that it's gross. My mind can pick it up, but I don't really know.
I was thinking I'm going to have to change that joke.
I thought you were really, I was like stoked for you that you were going to meet Whoopi Goldberg.
No, I would love to meet Whoopi, but that's why I put her in it. But you know, maybe I need to change Travis Scott to Lenny Kravitz or something.
There you go. There you go. American Woman, that was a huge track, dude. Lenny, when we were back in the day, Lenny Kravitz was the man.
Oh, yeah. You kidding me? Are you going to go my way?
That's great,
that lead right there, I still don't know how to play it, and I play guitar for a long time. Just certain things I don't touch. I'll leave that stuff alone.
So what do you got coming up next, man? You doing any traveling? I know you got Thursdays with Neff. You're featuring. You got any road gigs coming up?
Yeah, I think I'm in Dayton. I never pay attention until it's time to go.
That means you're living in the moment, though.
Yeah, too. Man, right? I'm in at some place called O'Connor's March 13. I'm at Wiley's in Dayton.
Yeah.
March 23rd.
Sweet.
But Thursdays are my thing, man.
Sweet.
What time on Thursdays at the
end? 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock every Thursday.
Every Thursday, man.
And then there's you open this up and
Depends on who's there. You know, sometimes I'll let somebody else headline, you know, and I'll host.
Cool.
Sometimes I'll just do a little feature spot, pop in and talk about whatever I got on my mind for the week. And then sometimes we get a crowd that's never been there before. So I hit them with the shit that I know they never heard and that I've worked on for a long time. And make sure we have a good escalation of the show, you know?
Hell, man. Thursdays might be the new spot every Thursday.
Yeah, man. I hope we'll we can keep it going. We've had a good 30-plus people every week so far. And that collective energy is pretty fun.
Absolutely.
Collective consciousness we were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
That vibe builds, man, especially when you have a cool thing going. And, you know, it's attracted us for sure. I mean, I see what's going on down there. The first time I went, I was like, this is dope.
Oh, man, I was already stoked that there was pizza there at Mikey's. Now you got a comedy club, too. Like, now you've got both of my favorite
things. Yeah, and it's two blocks away. Right. Yeah, I mean, you're literally over there. We're over here literally
in the heart of the
city.
If you live in Columbus, you're 20 minutes from Attic.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep, it's central.
It's worth your time. Check out their lineup, too.
Yeah, I get people, ever since Dave came, people call me from all over the country.
I believe it.
Nice. Some comics don't make a lot of money, but they make a little route where they make $100 here, $50 Friday, $75 Saturday. So they'll start their week at the Attic, you know what I mean? So we get people from all over.
Yeah.
We need that around here, too, though. We need comedy.
Yeah, man.
It's
Columbus
needed.
It's been tough. Like, there's been the Shrunken Heads had open mic nights.
I remember that.
They had
open mics.
What was the little place on campus they tried to do? little comedy room there for a long time. They went out of business. It was just like a little bar.
Now there's a place called Hashtag on High Street.
Okay.
That's pretty fun.
Okay.
We're out on High Street.
Just next to damn near Condado's.
Oh, okay.
Just north of Fifth Avenue, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a nice spot.
But there was never really like a scene like there. I feel like the Attic has created a scene.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't really a scene where people were like, wanted to be a part of it, wanted to be around it, where it was just like, yeah, we can go to the Funny Bone out at Easton and see a headliner and a feature and, you know, have some drinks and some food and, and you know, but it's, those comics are out.
Yeah.
You know, the very next, they might do three nights and they're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the Attic's got, you guys are building something really, really unique that the city, that this city needs.
This is grassroots.
Yeah, you can tell.
Bringing guys up from the bottom.
Yeah.
Well, and if it's getting attention like that, too, where you get comics that are coming there and it kind of helps, I don't know, instill a little bit of life into it as well, because you can go and do what you're doing, but without getting some of that attention, too, it's hard to, like, really pull it all in. And now it's nice, too, because you don't need those comics to come in all the time. Like, it's gotten it to an awareness level where it's like, oh, we're going to keep rolling, and they're going to keep dropping in and doing their thing as well. But, like, it's not like it's a necessity thing. You know what I mean? Like, that life is taken off at its own pace over there now.
Does this mean I can use the bathroom?
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gotta go. Yeah, go ahead. We'll wrap this baby up. We'll put it to bed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's been a great episode. Neff, thank you so much for coming out, dude.
All over
that
the
was
place.
So rad. Thank you for sharing all the stories. You guys can follow us at The Strange Road, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. Check out the Discord channel. All you guys in the chat, much love to everybody watching, listening. Hit that like button. Get yourself notified for all the streams and everything we got going on. Peace, love, and chicken grease.
Till
we
next
are
time.
Out.
Peace.
And
you know where it's at?
All Neff's links are in the description. Yeah, go show. Go show.